Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Welcome, friends. Hope y'all enjoyed the holiday without me. See, every day is Independence Day out here. Only I'm afraid to light off fireworks because of all the gas, half of which I'm convinced is made up of Chester's farts. Yeah, real convenient to blame it on the swamp gas, Chester. I see the bubbles. Nice try. That's what happens when you steal all my Twinkies. Anyway, let's head inside, y'all. The air's a little fresher in there. All right. You know what else is a breath of fresh air? You guessed it, simplyscarypodcast.com. You can become a patron there and listen to thousands of scary stories, no ads or anything. Just click on the patron button and follow the instruction. And if that's not enough patronage for you, check out patreon.com/DrewBlood. Help your pal stock up on Twinkies. All right, y'all, smoke 'em if you got 'em and drink those glasses to the bottom, 'cause your old buddy Drew Blood has a tale to tell. And tonight it comes courtesy of Cecily 1987. In it, we join an emergency dispatcher whose lines get crossed somewhere beyond the veil. So without further delay, from author Cecily 1987, I give you Within a Gloomy Wood. "911, what's the location of your emergency?"
I'm hurt.
"Where are you calling from, sir?"
There was nothing on the other end of the line as I pulled up the information boxes on my computer.
"Sir, how did you get hurt?"
"It's black, dark, darkness everywhere. I can't see where I am. Oh God, it hurts. I can't move. Please send an ambulance."
I could hear the pain and confusion in the mail caller's voice. The mixture was something I had heard often as a dispatcher. It usually occurs when a victim is in shock.
"Help is on its way. What is your address so the EMTs can find you?"
No. No address. I'm outside somewhere,"
he grunted in pain.
"Somewhere in the woods. I see stars. I hear cicadas. I don't know. I don't remember how I got here. Oh God, it hurts."
My mind raced on what to ask him next. The county I worked for had a lot of dark forest to hide you, so he wasn't really narrowing it down for a search area. So I snapped my fingers at my partner working in the dispatch office with me. I told her to ping his cell phone location off the nearest cell phone towers, and I scribbled the number down for her. Hopefully that would give us the approximate area of his location, but pinging the towers would take some time. I had to keep him talking and lucid.
"Do you see any roads near you? If you do, can you make out any road signs? My guys are on the way, but they need an exact location to find you faster."
This was a partial lie. I hadn't even dispatched a call to deputies or medical personnel yet, due to the lack of information I had. All I had was a man with unidentified pain lost in the woods. This wouldn't be the first time somebody got high out of their mind and wandered off into the woods and then called the sheriff's department for help.
"It's cold. It's freezing."
The man's voice started up again as I watched my partner's computer screen as she pinged his cell phone. I could hear his teeth chattering, and this reinforced the theory he was high off his ass. It was 85 degrees outside at the midnight hour. I knew PCP made its user feel unnecessarily hot, but what kind of drug made you feel cold?
It's pinging off the Bleakwood Tower,
my partner Sherry said, pointing to her monitor. Bleakwood was the farthest north you could get in the county. It was the least populated, with rolling hills and creek beds. Also, pinging a cell phone off a tower wasn't an exact science. It only meant the caller's cell phone was 20 miles within the diameter of the tower. That would take a lot of time to search through if somebody was seriously injured. Sherry, always the G, was already queuing up on the radio and relaying the information I had entered, along with her info out loud to deputies and medical responders. Our deputies would search the area while EMTs staged up somewhere close in case this call turned out to be something bad. "Sir, what's your name?" I said. I had to keep him focused.
"It hurts. Please hurry."
"Yes, sir, we are. Sir, can I get your name?" He had to calm down. He was in shock.
"B,"
he whispered, almost confused. "B, like the letter?" I repeated.
"No, she was my wife. I'm...
I could hear him grunting the sound of friction against the receiver.
"I can't remember. It hurts so bad. Where the hell are they?"
I took a deep breath. This was going to be a gamble. My job as a dispatcher was to keep the caller calm and get as much information as I could before the first responders arrived. People called me all day on the worst day of their lives wanting me to save them. They didn't understand my legal and ethical constraints. I kinda had to take my own Hippocratic oath to help me navigate my job. You know the one, do no harm, even while everything was going to hell around you. I measured what I was about to say. Was what I was about to tell the desperate man going to help him or send him over the edge? "Sir, I'm going to be honest with you. Can you hear me?"
Yes.
"My deputies are going to have a hard time finding you if you can't give them a better location to come to. If you can, and only if you can, I need you to look around and see if you can find anything to help us see or hear you."
Okay. Oh, God. I can't move. My feet are pinned, I think.
"Can you see what's pinning them or what's holding them down?"
"Barely. I can see better now. It's..."
I could hear more grunting and more shuffling.
"It's metal. Parts of it are warm. I smell gasoline."
"Advise deputies to be on the lookout for tire marks or debris showing a vehicle may have gone off the road," I relayed to my partner. After transmitting the information, Sherry nodded silently to the responses she was getting on her headset.
10-4 Unit 12, I'll let the caller know,"
Sherry said and turned to me.
"Let your guy know the deputies have their lights on and side takedowns on, lighting up the whole forest. He needs to call out if he can see them come by. He won't be able to miss them if he's near the road."
It was a good idea, and I was glad I had a senior deputy on my shift who had been on many rodeos already. I figured it was Davis's idea. I heard my caller begin to give a wet hacking cough for 30 seconds. Did he have internal bleeding? Time was of the essence. Screw it. I didn't care if they woke up the whole county blaring sirens up and down the roads past midnight. "Tell them to activate their sirens, too. If he can't see them, he sure as hell will hear them."
"Units 12 and 8 are still en route to the Bleakwood area, but they are running code. Approximately 10 minutes before the caller should be hearing them."
Right, 10 minutes. Big county with little manpower, and my caller seemed to be laboring for breath now. I had to keep him from going into shock again. "Sir, do you have a flashlight app on your phone?"
"App? What? Application?"
"Yes, can you use your phone screen to look around?" There was silence on the other end except for his heavy breathing. He seemed confused by my line of questions. I tried again. Do you have any information on your phone that can help me figure out who you are? You may be close to your house. If I get your name and date of birth, I can look up where you live.
Oh, okay,
he said.
But when I flipped the phone open, the screen was black. It must be cracked. It barely gives off a dull light. I don't even know how much battery is left.
Damn, a flip phone. But I guess a newer phone might probably not even survive a vehicle crash if that's what this was. Can you check your pockets for a wallet or ID?
Yes. I'm pinned almost to my waist. I'm hanging. I can barely get... I can feel something. I can barely get into my left pocket. There's something sticky all over me. Oh, fuck!
If it hurts too bad, just stay still, sir, I said, worried the sticky substance was his own blood or gasoline.
I got it,
the man said through heavy breathing.
My wallet. I can barely make out the picture. Oh, God. It's covered with blood.
Sir, don't worry. Just be still and...
The moon is full. Thank God. Just let me...
I heard grunting and shuffling.
Yes. It looks like it says my name is... Allens. Dante. Dante Allens. I can't see anything else due to the blood.
I turned to my partner and said to her, Caller's name is Dante Allens. See if we have anybody living in the Bleakwood area with that name. For some reason, Sherry's face went as white as a sheet of paper when she stared at me. Little did I know what that name meant at the time. Sherry was my junior on shift with only 3 years of work experience, but she had been born and raised in the area. She could locate a house from a barn door description. She also knew all the people in family drama because they were pretty much all extended cousins.
Gil, Dante's place is by Hook's Cutoff and the 505 Loop. There's no way. It has to be a prank.
Sherry tried to explain before being cut off by my caller.
I can hear them. The sirens. I hear them.
I quickly keyed up and asked, 412, what's your 20?
Unit 8 to dispatch. Unit 12 and I are coming up on the southbound 505 Loop. Put us in the area of Bleakwood searching. Has there been any new information from our caller?
Sir, tell me if you see any of the deputy's lights. And be sure to let me know if the sirens are getting louder or start to fade away. We are going to zero in on your location, okay? I said to Dante.
I see something. I see light.
You do, I said hopefully and jumped on the radio to tell both squad cars to slow up and hit the wood line with their high beams.
Yes, it's red. Flicking red. It's flashing all over. Where am I even? What the
Unit 12, call out on the megaphone for our caller. He says he sees your red and blues, I advised.
Oh God, it's everywhere!
Receive dispatch,
said the gruff cop on the other end of the radio.
Tell your caller to stand by and keep an ear out for us. We'll be coming up shortly.
There's blood coming from the sky,
screamed the caller.
It's raining on me! What is that? Who's there?
Excuse me, sir. What is going on now? Are you bleeding? Tell me what you see.
What have you done this time, Dante?
Came a female voice over the phone, surprising me. The female voice continued talking and said,
Now come and see, my dear. Come and see.
The line went dead. I sat in my chair, dumbfounded for a while. I called the number back only to get a disconnected line message, and the deputies were getting nervous on the radio. I couldn't blame them because I was nervous too, knowing every second could mean saving his life. I prayed he would call back. Finally, He called back after two agonizingly long minutes. 911, what's the location of your emergency?
I'm hurt,
he said again. Deputies are still in the area, Mr. Allens. Can I...
Black. Pitch black. All the damn darkness is just watching me right out of reach. It's just inches from my face waiting for me like a lion.
The familiar voice of Dante spoke with a tremble of madness in his voice.
I can't see where I am. Oh, God, it hurts. I think I'm hanging upside down. I can't get up. Please send an ambulance.
Yes, I understand. Help is on the way. I need to talk to the female that is with you. Can you get her to go out to the road and flag down the deputies looking for you? There was nothing but panicked breathing on the other end of the phone for a few seconds before I heard him say,
A woman?
Then Dante gasped in excitement, or maybe terror.
Oh, B, my love.
He said with hurt in his voice.
What happened to her? Where is she?
He asked, although he hadn't directed the question at me or to anyone. Dante? There was a female with you the last time you called. Was that a radio playing in the background, or was there somebody there with you? I spoke slowly, trying to make sure he followed.
Is somebody with me?
He wondered to himself.
Me? My beautiful wife, I'm sorry. Oh, God, I'm sorry.
Dante said, becoming more and more frantic.
I killed you, didn't I?
Dante, I responded in absolute shock. Who did you kill? You have to slow down and speak to me. I can't help you if you don't communicate with me. I need... A terrible radio feedback noise screeched its way across my phone's headset like a howling banshee. I instinctively tore the headset off to prevent my eardrum from exploding. That's when I realized the high-pitched noise wasn't just coming from my headset, but was emitting loudly from every radio in the dispatch room. The resounding screech was blood-curdling. Sherry held her hands over her ears and looked at me through squinting eyes. She was still white as a ghost and holding her ears with her elbows raised up high. The screech blared steady for about 10 more seconds, and Sherry was already rocking back and forth, murmuring to herself. The pain from the noise was building in my head also. What were we supposed to do? The sound was building to an awful crescendo.
Oh, God, it sounds like a woman screaming,
Sherry said with tears coming to her eyes.
It's just like Reverend James says. It's the gnashing of teeth, Gil. I wish I could shut her up.
Woman, who are you talking about?
I yelled at Sherry over the audible torment. Finally, the high-pitched noise stopped, and our ears were blessed with sweet reprieve. The relative silence itself was deafening in the cramped dispatch room as my ears rang in my head. What in the fresh hell are you talking about? I continued when Sherry took her hands off her ears. First, it's this mystery caller stressing the shit out of me, and now I got my shift partner going 1096.
Gil?
Sherry snapped.
Dante and his wife died a year ago at that spot. Dante and B. Allens died at Hook's Cutoff.
I paused for a moment. I couldn't believe what I was hearing from Sherry. I could tell she was telling me the truth. Well, at least her version of it. So it's a prank. It wouldn't be the first time 911 got prank called. What's the big deal?
I recognize the voice, Gil. Bea and Dante went to the First Baptist with me for years. Once you told me his name, it all clicked. And that scream sounded just like her.
I had to take a deep breath and decide the best way how to proceed. Sherry was still slightly shaken. She seemed like she was on the edge of a full-blown panic attack. I continued in my best calming voice. What screaming did you hear, Sherry? I let loose the question like the softest of softball pitches. Sherry still did not take it well regardless. Her eyes widened in astonishment.
The damn woman that was just screaming to high heaven. The damn woman that almost blew out our eardrums. It was B, Dante's wife, B. Allen's.
Okay, I said, patting the air between us in a calm down gesture. I paused shortly, choosing my words carefully. I could see Sherry was going to erupt with emotion again. Is that really what you heard? I said quietly to her.
Yes.
Tears began streaming from her eyes.
I don't get it either. I was there when they buried the two of them, and those were the voices I heard today. I swear.
The phone rang out again in front of me, and I knew the caller was Dante. I put the call on speakerphone for Sherry. 911, what's the location of your emergency? I said with my practiced emotional blandness.
I'm hurt,
said the dreaded familiar voice, filled with the same familiar amount of pain. I looked in terror at Sherry, and her eyes widened in fear. Dante, sir, is this you?
What?
Came the mumbled responses on the other end of the phone before Dante found his clarity.
Yeah. We talked before, right?
Yes. I still have deputies coming for you right now. Just hold tight, okay?
Okay. Just please hurry. It's just that it hurts.
Dante's voice broke into a sob.
It hurts so damn much.
If this was a prank, whoever was impersonating the dead man on the phone was a fantastic voice actor, because I felt my eyes begin to water slightly with sympathy towards him. I was about to give him some more words of encouragement when I heard it again, the sound of the female voice.
Come and see, babe. Come and see.
Cooed the intimate and honey-laced voice somewhere in the background of Dante's call. All hell broke loose as both Dante and my partner freaked out at the sound of his supposed long-dead wife beckoning to him. Sherry, who had been listening in on the conversation intently, quickly stood up and tossed her headset onto the keyboard in front of her. At the same time, I could hear Dante having his own freakout on the other end of the phone. Sherry tried to flee past me towards the exit door. I wasn't going to let her go AWOL on me.
Sherry, stop! What the hell?
I said as I caught her by her arm. She let me stop her with little resistance, as if she was ashamed of her actions. She began wiping the tears out of her eyes. I had to make a command decision, whether to address my partner or Dante. I put Dante on hold and gave Sherry my full attention.
You can't leave me all by myself with this shitstorm, girl. I know I'm new to the department since my transfer, but you and I have been ride or die since day one.
I can't,
Sherry replied quickly as tears began to roll down her face freely.
B and Dante were my friends. I've known B since high school. I went to their wedding as well as their funeral.
So it's a sick prank, I said. Once the ping comes back telling us where the call is coming from, we'll get our deputies to arrest the assholes who are tying up emergency service lines.
But...
Sherry replied.
It sounds just like them.
There was a beat of silence between me and my partner in the dispatch room. Only the sound of Dante on the other end of the phone screaming in pain as a female repeatedly called to him could be heard through the mic.
It's bullshit,
I said with finality. You believe it's really them? I asked. You believe Casper is calling us from the grave? Okay, where did they die then? I'll send the deputies to find them. I'll prove to you that it's just a prankster that's gotten your head. Let me send our guys to the place where they died. Sherry thought for a moment. It looked like the memories hurt her. Then she looked straight at me and answered.
Hooks Ridge on Highway 82, right past the sign on the road, where you take the sharp right on the bridge.
Sherry stopped for a bit, sighed, and went back to plop down in her work chair, defeated. The muffled screams of Dante calling for help continued between us.
Tell Deputy Davis. He'll know. He worked the scene when it happened.
Sherry continued.
Around this time last year, right before you came on at the department, we had a head-on collision between an SUV and a pickup truck, right at the curve on Hooks Ridge.
Sherry's face became serious.
Gory stuff. Family of four in the SUV. Two dead on scene, and the others just children pinned within. We called Jaws of Life to pry out the dying kids. Davis had to help guide a helicopter to land on the highway. The injured were life-flighted by chopper to the nearest hospital. This was all for nothing because everybody on the scene died. The man in the pickup looked like he might make it, but he died 2 days later at the hospital. It was, what's the term you used? A shitstorm.
I sat quietly for a bit, then asked, what about Dante and B?
We...
Sherry swallowed hard and made fists in her lap.
We didn't know there was a third vehicle involved in the collision. Dante and his wife were traveling in their Impala and must have been somewhere around the two vehicles that collided head-on with each other. Dante swerved out of the way of the two cars smashing into each other and went straight off the bridge, causing them to fly through the tree line. God, it was almost perfect. Dante's vehicle barely even snapped a twig or made any discernible path of carnage as it spiraled through the air. The Impala flew almost 50 feet downhill and crashed upside down through the ceiling of an old rusted shack by the creek bed.
That's horrible. Did they die on impact? Sherry gritted her teeth and started nervously tapping her foot before answering.
Unfortunately, no.
She continued.
We didn't even discover their vehicle until 33 hours later. The only reason emergency services were alerted was the fire. The fire marshal believes Dante tried to start a small fire from where he was trapped in his car. He must have hoped the smoke would alert emergency services. He took the chance even though he was surrounded by leaking gasoline. The fire quickly raged out of control and burned him alive before rescue could show up.
Sherry stopped to wipe a tear away before adding,
I just hope B was already gone. That's what the coroner said, at least. What an idiot, man,
she said out loud. He was desperate. He most likely was a few hours from dying himself due to exposure to the elements or bleeding out, I said to Sherry. We don't know what sort of headspace he was in.
Well, I guess we can just ask him now,
Sherry said as she pointed an accusatory finger at the blinking phone between us. Sherry, come on, cut the shit, I said. I listened to your story and I get that it was traumatic, but that's not Dante's damned ghost on the phone right now.
Well then, let's see, Gil. I'll take you up on your offer. Send Davis off the road to the shack at the bottom of Hooks Ridge where Dante and B crashed. Let's see what we see.
I thought for a while before I decided to change the plan just a bit, just to keep confirmation bias from clouding the outcome of the experiment. I dispatched the younger deputy by calling him on his personal cell phone and not putting the traffic across the open radio. Dante, a deputy is on his way right now. I need you to try to concentrate and describe to me what you see or hear, okay? Dante had long ago stopped screaming and was now only whimpering, and he only answered weakly with an okay. There were tense moments of silence as Sherry and I listened to Dante over the speakerphone. Then he spoke up.
I hear someone.
Okay, Dante, call out to them. I switched channels on the radio to let Deputy Gomez know to keep an ear out. Gomez acknowledged and told me he had eyes on the rusted shed.
Help! Please help! Can you hear me?
Dante screamed.
Approaching shed,
Gomez said matter-of-factly on his end of the radio. Me and Sherry looked at each other. There was no way Gomez couldn't hear Dante if he was that close to the shed. This had to be a prank.
I see his light! It's coming through the cracks on the walls. He's on the other side of some sort of door,
Dante said hopefully. Dante, can you...
I can't get to the door. Damn it to hell, I'm pinned. I can't.
Dante, don't upset your injuries any further. My deputies will come to you.
Please hurry. It's getting hot.
Dispatch, I'm about to make entry into the shed,
Gomez advised. 10-4, Unit 8, I replied, sending a jolt of nervous adrenaline through my body. I always thought it was so strange how the body's fight or flight response still kicked in even though I was miles from any danger.
Oh, thank God. I'm down here. Deputy, help unpin me,
Dante said over the speakerphone. I sighed in relief and felt a little foolish. I let out a small laugh and me and Sherry exchanged nervous smiles. It seemed it was just a normal call with eerie similarities to the late Dante Allen's. This would make a great war story to tell the rookies one day. I was picturing it in my head. Me and Sherry could tell the new hires about the night that a ghost had a living doppelganger. Unit 8, do you need me to send EMS your way? I asked Gomez. There was a pause on the other end of the radio before Gomez came back with his answer.
Negative, dispatch. The shed is empty. I think somebody is playing a game with us.
Now it was my turn to pause. Anger flooded through me as Dante continued to babble on the speakerphone, still trying to make a fool out of us.
Dante!
I interrupted his rambling.
The gig is up. No one is in the shed. You had your sick laughs. You fooled us well, but you're also breaking the law. Get off the phone and don't call 911 again unless it's a real emergency.
Wait, what? What the hell are you talking about?
I had to admit he was a great actor because the fear and bewilderment came through perfectly.
The cop is 4 feet away from me. Short Mexican guy with a mustache. Deputy, officer, hey... What the f...
Dante paused.
What does that name tag say? Gomez, shine your flashlight on me. I'm trapped in this car. Do you see me?
No, I wasn't going to fall for this. The caller could have a police scanner and could know Gomez was in Unit 8, or... Unit 8, the caller is describing you. Can you check the shed for cameras?
It's getting hot. So hot. Please tell him to just bend over and help unwedge me. I'm upside down in this freaking seat. I can see now because of his flashlight. The driver's seat has me pinned against the steering wheel. Look! I'm upside down!
Hey, to dispatch, the shed is empty. If there's a hidden camera, it has to be microscopic.
Gomez's radio chatter squawked in reply to me.
I'm not a damn camera! This dumb pig is kneeling down right in front of me! He's looking right through me! He has a Marine Corps Eagle Globe and anchor pin right next to his SO pins on his collar. He smells like Old Spice. I can almost reach him!
Unit 8. I keyed up, determined not to be fooled anymore.
8, go ahead.
The shed doesn't have a roof, correct? Can you scan the trees around the opening in that ceiling for cameras?
No, I'm down here on the ground. Stop messing with me. It's getting really hot. I think I smell gasoline. Please stop playing with me. Help!
I realized Dante was responding to me by hearing my radio traffic come across Gomez's personal radio. I had been instinctually muting and unmuting Dante every time I talked to my deputies, so Dante couldn't predict their movement. I was sure there was a camera in there picking up audio and visuals.
Hey, you! Officer! Deputy! Can you please help? Are you in charge? Your partner is ignoring me!
Dante spoke with renewed vigor. Unit 8, are you still alone in the shed? I asked.
Negative, dispatch. Unit 12 just made it down to my 20.
Now I knew Deputy Davis had snuck down to the shed without letting his dispatchers know. I couldn't really blame him for being curious. Hell, I wanted to look around too.
Wait, I know this cop.
Dante said to me over the line.
12 to dispatch,
answered the deeper voice of Deputy Davis.
Me and Aid are getting a strong and overwhelming smell of gasoline. The scent just flooded in out of nowhere. I'm afraid one of us tipped over a fuel canister or something while walking down here in the dark. We're going to see if we can locate the origin of the smell before we go 10-8.
Oh, God, no! Where are they going? Come back! Why are they leaving?
Dante began to frantically scream. I tried to ignore Dante and his amazing acting skills. He really did sound like he was frightened and in pain, but I was done with being tricked by this cruel joke. I would just let my deputies check the area and go 10-8 back to normal patrol, none the wiser of Dante's whining on the other line. I figured it was one of the friends or relatives of the poor actual deceased Dante and B. Allen. This prank caller probably felt like they were punishing the sheriff's department for not saving the real Dante and his wife on that terrible night.
It's starting to burn, Gil. Please tell them to turn around,
Dante screamed.
It burns! It burns! I can see flames, Gil! Help!
Sherry began to sob quietly into her hands, and hearing her only made me angrier. How dare this prank caller put my partner through such emotional turmoil? I couldn't wait for the deputies to get done with their search so I could hang up on the asshole.
Shit, this is a fire! The vehicle is on fire!
Dante's words turned into incomprehensible screams of agony. I was about to lower the volume on the speaker between me and the Sherry, but froze when I heard the all-too-familiar voice.
Come and see.
A female voice soothed through the short pauses in Dante's screams.
You heard that?
Sherry said. She had snuck up to lean over my shoulder and made me jump a bit in surprise.
She still sounds just like B. How is that possible?
Yeah, I replied with an exasperated sigh. It's just another prank caller, Sherry. You gotta hand it to them. They did their homework.
Don't come closer!
Dante continued his horrid screams.
She's right out of reach of the fire! No! It will burn you too! Stay back! Fuck!
Unit 8, Unit 12.
Sherry almost yelled into her headset as she keyed into my radio traffic.
Go ahead, Sherry.
Davis answered nonchalantly.
Yes,
She looked at me guilty. I just held out my palm in a it's-all-yours gesture.
We're receiving calls of a fire coming from inside the shed you and Gomez just left. So please, 1019 to check if it's all code 4.
That's a big 10-4.
Davis said with barely hidden exasperation.
Come and see, my love.
B, I can't come with you.
Dante spoke between his screams of burning pain.
I remember now. I know what you want me to see. I didn't mean to hurt you and those people. Please, God, forgive me.
Come and see.
The woman's voice continued soothingly.
The fire. Oh, the fire. It's all around me. I'm already in hell, B. Tell them that.
Dante said one last time before letting out the most gut-wrenching sob I'd ever heard.
12 to dispatch. The smell of gasoline is still very strong in this area, but we were still UTL on any gasoline cans or flame hazards. Once we clear the shed, you can put me and Unit 8 back 10-8 on patrol. Unit 8 to dispatch. Do I have any calls holding?
Holy shit!
Gomez screamed into his radio. Everything hit the fan at once. Being a good dispatcher is like having to complete puzzles with just two or three pieces while the rest are missing. So I got used to taking just nuggets of information and trying to deduce, like Sherlock, what the hell was going on. Far as I figured, Gomez had re-entered the shed first while talking on his radio. Gomez saw, which he later denied, a flipped-over Impala, surrounded by flames, and a frail, bald woman standing outside of it. Dante stopped talking to the woman and immediately jumped on the fact that the deputies could see him now.
Officer, please help. Get her away from the flames. Get her away!
Dante screamed, his voice beaconing over the phone. The next voice I heard was the usually unshakable Deputy Davis, trying not to sound terrified.
Oh, God. Dispatch, I need fire and EMS to my location. Oh, God!
I could hear Deputy Gomez and Dante yelling in the background of David's radio. I couldn't believe Dante was there. He was physically there in that shed. It wasn't a camera or a prank call. I could hear him and my deputies yelling back and forth with each other. Then, silence. Dante's call went dead, and Sherry and I were left for 30 seconds of dead air. Those 30 seconds felt like an eternity as we sat frozen in our chairs.
Unit 12, Unit 8, status check?
Sherry finally asked, breaking the quiet.
12, 8, status check.
Another 30 seconds of silence, and I was calling everyone, all the way up to the National Guard for backup. But finally, Davis replied to us.
You can 22 my last traffic, but we don't need anybody out here.
Davis said meekly. There was another span of silence, and me and Sherry just looked at each other dumbfounded. We both heard Deputy Gomez speaking frantically in the background of Davis's radio traffic. Something had happened or had just happened in the shed, and they weren't telling us.
Unit 8, is everything code 4?
Sherry asked nervously. More silence assaulted us. Then Deputy Gomez finally replied in a stilted voice.
Yes, code 4. You can cancel fire and EMS. I was mistaken.
We heard Davis speaking to Gomez in the background.
Listen, Jim, you're not crazy.
Gomez keyed up with,
you can put both units back in 10-8 immediately.
10-4, both units back in service.
Sherry replied with a quizzical look on her face. That was the last transmission we heard about our ghosts for the last 3 hours of the shift. The two deputies left the Bleakwood area and returned back to regular patrol. Sherry and I had sucked it up and went back to acting like everything was normal as citizens around the county continued to call 911 for loud music. The elderly requested ambulances, and deputies called out license plates on traffic stops. We just hoped one of the deputies would come by and talk to us after the shift. Finally, at the end of the shift, I found myself outside where deputies and dispatchers like to smoke and shoot the breeze between shifts. Sherry was puffing on her cig like a chimney, and I was tapping my foot nervously. We both knew we could be waiting in vain because both deputies lived in the county and were allowed to take their patrol vehicles home after shift. The morning sun had just begun its ascent over the town square when Deputy Davis came creeping up in his patrol car. The mood coming from the old deputy was that of an undertaker driving a hearse. He popped out of his driver's seat and gave us both grim eye contact before gently closing his door and taking calm and measured steps to walk up to us. That's when I realized Davis was terrified and was trying to put up his macho cop front before he started speaking to us. When he did talk, it was in a hushed and serious tone. He recounted the events of the night from his perspective. He told us how he snuck away to follow the younger Deputy Gomez into the woods when the mysterious yet familiar calls kept coming in. Davis said when he first arrived and walked into the shed, Gomez was just alone. Nothing was out of the ordinary. It was just a rusty shack with a roof caved in. The only thing strange about it was 10 degrees colder inside and the overwhelming smell of gasoline. After they checked the area for gasoline, things really kicked off. Davis said he was right behind Gomez as Gomez re-entered the shed the second time around. But this time, the shed wasn't empty. Davis corroborated on what Gomez originally said he saw, saying he observed a flipped-over vehicle surrounded by flames. Davis didn't see the woman, but he heard her speaking. He told us how surreal it felt, that he was hit with a wave of cold as the flames illuminated the night. The juxtapositions of cold air and roaring flames scrambled his brain for a moment. Deputy Gomez told Davis he jumped forward into the shed to pull the woman away from the flames. Gomez also said he heard a male voice urging him for help. Before Gomez could lay a finger on the frail, bald woman, in a wink they were all gone. All disappeared into the night air. The cold flames, the voices, the woman, all out of existence like a switch was flipped. Deputy Gomez stood there reaching for nothing, and Davis could only blink the sunspots out of his eyes as the darkness of the night shrouded them once again. Davis said he had to calm Gomez down from having a panic attack on the spot. They got the hell away from the place as quickly as possible. But Davis wanted to make it known that it wasn't a prank. Dante and B. Allens were still out there in those woods. That was the start of my strange back-and-forth communication with Dante on most full moons. We had a small department, and word of the night spread like wildfire. Dante's ghost calls would come in periodically, and nobody in dispatch was willing to talk to him besides me. The calls were frequent enough and disconcerting enough to make Sherry quit. I didn't really blame her, and it had every dispatcher using sick leave during the night shift on full moons. Word on the street was Gomez was trying to get hired on at a neighboring county for less pay just to avoid the ghost stuff. Bottom line was, it was hurting the sheriff's bottom line. Regardless if he believed in ghosts or not, he had to address the situation that had swept through his department. The sheriff realized I had a rapport with the mysterious caller, and I was calm enough to not throw holy water all in the dispatch room. So the sheriff officially put me on special assignment. I could even get called up on my days off. They just said I had advanced crisis intervention training and was talking to a suicidal caller. I couldn't complain because it came with a pay bump. During one of Dante's episodes, he would call 911 repeatedly and go through the same scenario over and over like a script he would follow. He would be confused, then slowly start to realize where he was, and then fire would start. He would burn, and then he would go back to quiet for a few days. Dante never deviated from this script, no matter how hard I tried to steer it otherwise. Maybe he was like a record on a loop. Maybe there was a repeating bubble in time, scarred in pain and guilt out there in the woods. It seemed like a purgatory prison personally made for him. I wanted to help him out. I wanted to help him through his demons. The only way out is through, was my mantra to him. It seemed lately he would snap out of his confusion and remember everything fully and break his curse. It took months of me working with him, but he was beginning to recall more and break his cycle of forgetting almost everything every time the cycle repeated. He started to remember our past conversations, and I was beginning to find the deeper truth behind the mystery on why Dante had stuck himself in his own private hell. Dante knew he was dead and refused to move on. He told me that once in a phone call. He probably forgot he admitted it to me. He said he knows he is dead, and all his pain comes from not crossing over. But he is terrified of the things that wait for him in the dark. Then there was the terrible thunderstorm that had come in on the night Dante told me the reason he believed he deserves hell. He told me why he deserved eternal damnation. I had known Dante for a while at this moment now. It was a year and a month past the first time I had ever picked up the phone and ever talked to him on that first fateful night. Maybe the sheriff saw me as some sort of babysitter to Dante's strangeness. But I saw myself as some sort of a guide. Maybe I could lead him out of this torment. It was my day off, and my work flip phone buzzed incessantly on my nightstand beside me as I lay in bed. I was still awake, so I snatched it quickly. already expected to get a call about Dante during the night anyways. Sometimes I could just feel when he was going to act up.
Hey, Gil, did I wake you?
Asked the male dispatcher that was currently on shift. He sounded shaken. No, I was up. Let me guess, is it our frequent flyer? I said, trying to inject some levity into the situation.
Yeah, he's in a mood tonight.
That's every night with him, Mitch.
No, you can feel something is wrong,
Mitch said on the other end of the line. Before I could question Mitch any further, he went ahead and transferred me over to the line Dante was holding on. Immediately, I felt a throbbing ache in my bones and the temperature plummeted drastically in my small bedroom. I swallowed and my ears popped like the air pressure had changed in an airplane. These sort of manifestations had never happened before.
Gil, I remember,
Dante informed me.
I know why I'm going to hell. Please help.
Dante, my friend, I said with a sigh and wrapped my bed covers tighter around me. We've talked about this many times. You're not going to hell. Everything I've heard people say about you is that you're an honest, church-going, and faithful husband.
No, no, no. Listen for once,
he said with growing panic, common for conversations with him.
Stop trying to do the cop thing by trying to lie to me to get me to calm down. I need you to just shut up and listen to me this time, just as a friend.
I quieted, and Dante did for a moment as well. The beats of silence went on long enough for me to think that he had been disconnected before he finally spoke up with a somber, low voice.
You know, she had cancer, right?
He said with grim finality. Yes, it was breast cancer, I believe you said. She had undergone multiple rounds of chemo treatments. You've piecemealed most of this information just recently to me. Just like how you tell me the same thing over and over all the other times you've called me. Do you remember Dante? I know what I had just said to Dante was risky. Usually, every time he called 911, he didn't remember anything but only tiny fragments of our past conversations. If I let him know he was on a loop, he would sometimes take the information well and help me dig up more answers for him. Or Dante could react the opposite to having an info dump on him and react with an existential crisis on me. This would usually leave him a sobbing mess for the rest of the night until he hung up or the ghost flames engulfed him. I had the faith Dante really wanted to tell me something tonight, and my gamble would pay off.
Oh, yeah. I forget,
Dante said placidly.
But yeah, she was in remission, though. The doc said she still wasn't out of the woods just yet. The cancer had come back before. We tried so hard to save her life. And I went and killed her.
Dante, don't say that. It was an accident.
Gil, what did I say about that bullshit? Just let me talk.
Dante retorted with an anger I had never heard him use towards me.
No.
Dante continued in a calmer voice after there was a moment of silence between us.
No. I remember everything. Truth is, I've always known. I pushed it away. But the more I accept the truth, the clearer the memories become.
How have you always known? Half the time you don't remember your name or how you got out in the woods until I walk you to the answers.
It's like this. The knowledge has always been there. Like a splinter itching in my head, begging me to scratch it. When I finally did, all these memories came flooding back.
I realized I could see my breath plume out in front of my face as the temperature dropped even lower in my room. Somehow his grief was affecting the physical world. I theorized the longer his spirit stayed in the purgatory state out in the woods, the stronger his pull on the real world grew.
We were coming back from staying at the specialist's on the day of the crash. The doc had given us good news about the cancer's remission, but he was also pragmatic about the possibility of the cancer returning.
Dante reiterated.
The doc wanted B to try to strengthen her body as much as she could since the chemo and sickness had left her in such a weakened state. My God, she was so frail,
Dante remarked. I listened dutifully, surprised at the lucidity and recollection Dante was displaying. All these months of working with him seemed like they were paying off. I was finally leading him to answers he needed to pass on to the afterlife.
Oh, Lord,
Dante lamented to himself.
We were almost home when B decided to share the good news with me. Why didn't she just wait until we were safe at home? Why?
Dante asked as his voice broke into a sob. What was it? I gently prodded.
She told me she was pregnant. I thought she was on the pill or couldn't get pregnant during chemo. I don't know. It was the last thing on my mind,
Dante yelled.
But obviously B had different plans. She never told me about how she wanted to get pregnant. She was happy she was pregnant. She thought I would be happy too.
Didn't you and B want kids?
Yes,
Dante said with more anger.
But not if the child growing in her would kill both of them. She was barely strong enough to support herself, and she thought she was strong enough to carry a child. And what if she died when the cancer came back? She would be bringing a child into the world without a mother.
Maybe, I began to interject, she wanted to give you a family to be with if she ever passed away.
But oh no, she wouldn't listen, Gil,
Dante interrupted.
She had to have this baby. A glimmer of hope in all this death, she said.
Dante fumed.
So we argued. I screamed at her. I told her to terminate the child. I told her to prioritize her own survival first. She started screaming back. She said if she died, she wanted to leave a son or daughter for me while she still had time. We screamed and argued and screamed and argued.
The sadness in Dante's voice rang so hollow in my ears, and tears formed in my eyes. I knew what he was going to tell me next, and my heart broke.
Somehow I was distracted. I was leaning over screaming at B when I drove into the oncoming lane. I almost drove head-on into oncoming traffic. I swerved to the left and sent the family of four to smash head-on into the car behind me. I killed them, Gil. It was all me.
Holy shit. I shouldn't have said.
Yes, you're right,
Dante confirmed.
But it's not the worst of my sins.
He sighed heavily into the receiver. I could hear his shaky breath as he tried to compose himself.
What are the damn odds? I guess God really does hate me. How did we perfectly land through the roof of this freaking shed?
How was B? Did she die on impact? I blurted without my normal tact. I didn't care, though, because Dante had me hanging on his every word.
She was alive,
Dante answered grimly.
But she wasn't there. We were both upside down and pinned in a metal coffin in the pitch dark. I was hurting with either mine or B's sticky blood covering me. I could hear B talking to herself. It was nonsense talk. She just kept murmuring and whimpering and laughing like she was in her own world. I couldn't see her, but I could reach out to her. She was broken and bloody. All I could do was comfort her and talk to her.
I'm so sorry, Dante, I offered.
She stayed that way for hours, I guess her brain finally swelled in her skull and she death spasmed right next to me. She shook and struggled and finally became silent and peaceful. I killed my wife and unborn child. Hell is waiting for me because all the people I killed died because of my selfishness and negligence.
I had no idea what to say to him in the following moments. The worst was I didn't completely disagree with his self-accusations. I could physically feel his pain and guilt bleeding through the phone. Finally, something hit me. I knew what to say.
You said peaceful, right? She was finally at peace when she died?
Yes. So what?
He replied. I've heard her call to you. She's at peace now. You said it. And now she calls to you. You have to join her. Dante let out a wry laugh before addressing me.
I wasn't a Bible scholar. That was more B. She was the preacher's daughter. I just started going to church again because of her. I didn't know the good book front to back like she did. But I knew the important ones, and sure as hell knew my Johnny Cash. And the thing is, B knew the verses I would remember.
Now I was even more dumbfounded. What did an old folk singer have to do with all this? All of a sudden, Dante's thoughts didn't just come from the phone, but formed directly in my head. They were fragments, but the message was clear.
Come and see. Come and see. Behold a white horse, and hell followed with him. Hell awaits you, Dante. Hell is for murderers.
I saw the mental picture of a frail, bald woman surrounded by fire. She was giving a warning to her husband about the fate that was waiting for him. But was it worse than the inferno he had to endure every cycle he called 911 for help? Suddenly, my cold room began to heat up like a furnace, and I heard Dante let out a painful yelp in surprise on the other line. Smoke began to sizzle off my phone into my ear and face. Dante was screaming now, and I was screaming along with him. I quickly hung up the phone and tossed it across the room like a diseased rat. I was left in the dark quiet of my bedroom as the temperature went back to normal immediately. I knew somewhere Dante would have to deal with his inferno alone tonight. Is this the place? I asked Gomez as he put his patrol car into park at the side of the road.
Yeah, just walk off the road right between the start of that little bridge and the Hook's cutoff sign,
Gomez said nervously as he pointed out into the darkness of the forest.
It's an immediate steep drop-off that runs off to the river in the old shack.
Gomez looked over at me in the passenger side and handed me a hefty metal mag light. I tested its brightness and almost blinded both of us with the onslaught of lumens in our eyes. I yelped and turned it off.
Gil, are you sure you want to do this?
Gomez asked earnestly while he blinked away the spots in his vision from the blinding flashlight.
Well, what if you get hurt down there? You said it yourself about how you theorized Dante gets more powerful the longer he haunts that damn shack. You know he's been out here for so long. The flames could hurt you now. He could hurt you. And I'm on duty right now, so...
Gomez, I said, stopping the older deputy in his train of thought. I know you don't want to go down there with me. I know there's nothing anyone could do that could get you back into that shack. I never expected you to accompany me. This is just between me and Dante. And there's no way Dante would intentionally harm me, I added. Gomez looked relieved by my words and physically relaxed his shoulders and released his death grip on the steering wheel. He held the expression of a man spared his execution right in the nick of time.
I'll wait here on the road as long as I can,
Gomez said once color returned to his face. If I get a priority call, I'll be back as soon as possible, or I'll send one of the rookies to come pick you up if I'm taking too long with that one. I knew Gomez wouldn't leave me out here. He was scared shitless of whatever was in that shack in the woods, but he was as solid as they come. He had proved himself a stand-up guy during his long career in law enforcement. He was scared of no man, but had no time for ghosts and the supernatural. I gave Gomez a knowing pat on his shoulder before I opened my door to step out into the night. I walked towards the spot he had indicated between the sign and the beginning of the bridge's railing. I felt butterflies in my stomach as I made it to the edge of the road and looked out into the pitch blackness of the woods where the ground seemed to drop away into nothing. I remember having the same butterflies in my stomach the night Dante had first called the S.O., and now that I was physically here, I felt silly for being scared back then. Gomez's flashlight illuminated the forest with brilliant white light as I slowly made my way down the steep incline. I could see the roofless metal shed next to the reflective creek. It took me longer than I would have liked to admit maneuvering my way down towards Dante's final resting place, but I was getting weaker, and I felt like one good fall would shatter me like porcelain. Once I finally made it down to the creek bed, I noticed all sound in the forest had stopped. Only the trickling water and the silver bloom of the full moon painted the still night as I approached the infamous shed. As I pushed the metal door open, I half expected to see a man shrouded in flames, screaming the screams I had heard so many times before. But I was greeted with the same silence from outside. It was just a dingy, dark shack, with the same ominous moon glaring down through the open ceiling. I went and stood in the middle of the shack and closed my eyes as if in prayer. It was past midnight. The call should be coming soon. Dante, I said aloud, eyes still closed. I need to speak with you. Only quiet replied to my summons as I felt for any change in my surroundings. Finally, I thought I could feel the temperature drop from a humid night to a chilly breeze across my bare skin.
Back! Get back!
I heard Dante yell, making me jump in fright. I looked down immediately to my right and saw an upside-down man reaching out of a window, trying to grab my leg. I instinctually jumped back out of reach of the grabbing hand and realized the man was trapped in the upside-down car. Both he and the smashed car had just appeared out of nowhere.
Get back! You're too close! When the fire starts, you'll be in it!
He screamed in warning to me as I backpedaled in a frenzy to collide against the opposite wall with a clang. After the moment of shock faded, I realized that the distraught man in the vehicle was Dante. My Dante. He was pale-skinned with loose black hair dangling everywhere as he struggled in his pinned position. His eyes were wild, but he was more handsome than I had pictured in my mind. Dante, I called out to him calmly.
You can't be here. The fire will burn you. It's gotten stronger. You have to call 911. Ask for Gil. He knows what's going to happen.
Dante, it's me. I am Gil. I'm here to see you. I came to see you in person.
Dante just stopped and hung there for a moment, awkwardly jammed against his steering wheel while inverted. His face went from shock to a thin smile.
You finally came to see me in the flesh? Well, figurative?
At this moment, I ran to him and dropped on my knees to move closer to eye level with him. His smile widened and so did mine. I was finally meeting the friend I had been talking to for so many years. I instinctively reached out to help him. His eyes bulged in surprise and I jerked my outstretched hands back with a gasp of pain. My two arms had instantly gone from room temperature to a sharp freeze. I looked at the tips of my fingers. They were numb and throbbing red. They already began to swell. Was it cold or burning that I felt coming from them?
I don't think the living and the dead were meant to touch, Dante said sympathetically. I guess I have to be honest with you and tell you the truth.
He gave a timid smile, trying to lighten the mood. I was still processing the fact that my hand was inflamed and I was talking to a ghost trapped upside down in a wrecked car feet in front of me. But I guess this was just his reality.
It seems news of our little talks has gotten around,
Dante said almost sheepishly. Well, it's been literal years, and the sheriff's department has had so many employees come and go, I replied. Plus, rumors spread like wildfire in this county, no matter how well we tried to keep it neat to know.
Well, a paranormal investigator would come out here,
he continued.
She said it was for an internet thing.
Oh, Dante, is that why you got so quiet on me for a couple of full moons? I laughed.
Actually, yes,
he said with a bigger smile.
I couldn't appear to her at first. It took practice. I had to focus. But I should never have done it. I should never have drugged her into my hell.
A sense of dread hit me. Maybe Deputy Gomez was right. Maybe this was a mistake to come down here. But I quickly squashed those thoughts and pushed through. I was here for a reason, and I was going to stay true to my purpose. Tell me what happened.
Her name was Kyler. At first, I wouldn't appear. But she was stubborn and would sit here all night and ask questions into the air with the recorder between her legs. Or she would light candles and draw symbols to summon me like I was a demon or something. She even pulled out a Ouija board like she was at some high school sleepover. I was so dumb to talk to her. She was just a young college kid and I was being a selfish loser.
I just waited patiently. This wasn't exactly the answer to my question. It was just more of Dante's typical self-loathing that I had become used to. He would get to the point eventually.
But I finally did break down and begin to show myself to her. I learned how to manifest myself. Yes, it used to be random, but now I have better control, especially on full moons, just like tonight. I learned I could fully manifest and maintain myself on this physical plane of reality. I only did it once with her and she almost died. So you have to go before it's too late.
No, Dante, not before I tell you something, I said.
Gil, we can talk about it later. If you stay here, the cycle will happen and the fire will consume me. The fire engulfed Kyler like she was tinderwood. The poor girl ran and collapsed outside still aflame. Her friend put her out and ran her to the hospital. If Kyler didn't have a friend too scared and waiting outside, the poor girl would have burned to death just like me in these damned woods. Just another victim of my hubris.
Dante began to yell.
I care for you too.
Dante! I interrupted. Dante quieted, hanging silently in his seat.
You must let me speak my piece then, because this will be the last time we will ever talk. Gil? What do you mean?
It's been years, Dante. And I'm getting older. I wasn't a spring chicken when you first called me. I was going to a smaller department to round out my retirement. Dante looked at me in complete bewilderment. I could see in his eyes he never considered my side of our relationship before. Hell, Dante, I retired from the SO years ago. I've kept in touch because of my love and friendship for you.
Gil, I'm so sorry,
Dante finally said, snapping out of his shock.
I haven't paid you any attention. I mean, I'm stuck. I'm dead. I just see myself. I just saw this moment. I mean, that night. I've neglected you. I don't want to chase you away,
Dante pleaded.
Don't leave me.
No, my friend, it's not like that, I said, holding up a hand to stop his begging. I scooched closer to him on my knees and looked him in the eyes. I reached up slowly and removed the scarf from my head. It took Dante a moment to recognize the significance of the moment. This was the first time he had seen me, but I could see that it clicked on why I put so much grim attention on my bald head.
It's that damned cancer! Oh, God, Gil! You got it too!
He said with shock.
How long? Why, I mean, what do you need to do about it? I've been such a fool. I've never asked you about your health.
Dante, it's fine, I said. I have a plan. It's in remission right now. Since I'm widowed, I'll be moving closer to my son and daughter a couple of states away. They both have a place set up for me, and the treatment facilities up there are top-notch. We don't know how all this works, I said, motioning around to the shed and the ghostly wrecked car. But I remember when I went on vacation out of county, dispatch couldn't transfer your call to my phone. Somehow your presence has a local calls-only range on it. I don't think we'll be able to have our full moon chats anymore. I saw the despair wash over Dante's face as he realized what was happening. He would truly be alone in the woods again. He would be stranded by himself to face his demons by himself, alone and burning in pain and guilt over and over. I began to cry. It wasn't fair, none of it was. The cancer in my body, the wreck that took Dante and B's life, all of this. I had to make it right. I couldn't live in a world that allowed things to be so broken. I won't abandon you, I said as tears blurred my vision of him. If the sickness takes me, I'll find my way back to you. Even if I live a full life, I'll find my way here, to this shack. We will face the darkness together. I'll sit with you for as long as you need me to. I'll sit until you're ready to cross over. The fire doesn't scare me, okay? Even with my vision dulled due to my tears, I saw Dante's expression change. I didn't understand his response. I had just shared my heart with him, and I truly meant what I said. But Dante looked furious with me.
What did you just say to me?
He demanded as he struggled fruitlessly with the seatbelt that held him suspended and inverted in the driver's seat.
Tell me again what the hell you just said, just so I'm clear.
I started nervously.
I wouldn't abandon you in these woods. Once my time is up, I will find you. I would find a way to make it here instead of moving on to whatever afterlife awaits me, and
you would sit with me.
Dante interrupted with a tone almost like an accusation.
Yes. I stuttered. I don't see how this...
You would burn with me,
Dante stated more than asked.
Yes, for as long as you need it,
I snapped back.
I won't leave you out here alone, Dante. I'll sit and weather the storm with you until you are ready to move on. What is your problem?
Dante closed his eyes and took a couple of deep breaths. I didn't understand how I could have insulted him. What I said was honest from my heart and meant a lot to me.
Enough is enough,
Dante said quietly with his eyes still closed.
The only way out is through, right? That's your favorite thing to say to me.
He opened his eyes and looked at me with that same slight smile.
I don't know what I said to upset you, I said. Please help me understand. That's the problem, Gil. It's always been all about me, hasn't it?
Dante said with a strange calmness that was new to him.
You give and give, and I take and take. I seem to do that in a lot of my relationships. For heaven's sake, I never asked you about your health or about your family. I never stopped to realize you had a life I was interrupting.
Dante said as his calm demeanor began to falter.
You're even fighting the cancer that almost took my bee. And I was too selfish to notice.
It's okay, Dante. Your situation is not normal. I don't fault you for being a little hyper-focused on your trauma. I mean, it killed you and a bunch of people.
Yes, yes, but nobody else should have to pay for my actions. Nobody else has to be burdened with my pain or die for my sins. I have to end this. The only way out is through.
I felt a mixture of emotions wash over me. This is what I wanted for Dante for years. I just hoped he was ready and not going to be wishy-washy on me. I had to make sure he was ready. We still aren't sure where you're going after you leave these woods, I added solemnly.
Yeah, he replied just as solemn. I'm like Schrodinger's cat out here in these woods. I'm both alive and dead, forgiven and punished. Going to heaven and hell. No, he continued. There has been too much death brought on because of me. You must focus on your own life, Gil. As you fight your monsters, you shouldn't have to think of defending me from mine.
Dante, I couldn't help it and reflexively reached out to my friend just a couple of feet away from me. The sharp burn made me pull my hand back quickly.
I don't know about you, but it's getting hot in here,
Dante said with a slight quiver in his voice.
You need to leave the area for your safety.
I can stay with you for this last night. I'll stay at a safe distance, but I'll camp out with you during this last cycle. I can at least give you that.
Not necessary, my friend. I won't stay in the fire long,
he told me with a worried smile and a look of barely disguising immense fear.
This will be my last night, too. I'll let B take me. She can show me whether it's heaven or hell.
Are you sure?
It's not my story anymore, Gil. It's about the living, not the dead. I won't hold you back anymore. You have to be strong for yourself.
Before I could say anything back to Dante, ghostly flames began sprouting up around him, and an intense cold sucked all the breath out of me.
Out! Now!
Dante screamed at me as his whole body erupted in horrible blistering flames. I ran back to the shed door as he screamed in pain. The scream was so much worse in person. I happened to get outside and slammed the shed door behind me and not get burnt by the preternatural cold flames. After a while, I could hear that Dante had turned his scream of anguish into a controlled moan.
Are you hurt?
Dante asked through the pain.
No, I'm fine. It just scared me is all,
I said. I put my ear up to the icy shed door to hear Dante on the other side. I sickened myself as I imagined him talking to me while the spectral flames scoured through his hanging body.
Just stay for me for now. Please.
He almost begged me through his pain. It seemed like a pain that made forming a coherent thought almost impossible.
Last time. I swear. Yes, of course,
I yelled back through the door. His screaming went on, and I kept telling him I wasn't leaving him. Finally, after a couple of minutes of Dante burning, I heard what we were waiting for.
Come and see, babe. Come and see,
invited the melodious voice of Bee, his wife.
Yes,
Dante breathlessly yelled.
Come get me, wife. I will go with you. I am ready. I am ready for whatever the consequences of my actions are.
Tears rolled down my eyes as I realized the saga was coming to an end. I still dared not open the shed door because the strange cold was causing frost to freeze around its cracks. I knew something momentous had taken place in the shed. I believe B had taken Dante up on his offer to take him to the afterlife.
Gil?
Dante's voice came, more gentle.
Yes. What's happening? I'm standing, and there's a light at the end of a tunnel sort of deal.
Are you serious? I laughed.
Yes, but it's not funny. Bees at the end with something. But every time I step forward, it gets hotter. It gets hot like hell.
Or a cleansing fire, I said.
You can't stay here forever, Dante. Yeah,
he sighed.
The only way out is through, right? I'll accept hell if it's deemed necessary.
Then quieter.
Please, God, forgive me.
And with that, Dante went quiet. I rubbed the tears out of my eyes and the temperature around me began to return to normal. I trekked my way back out to the road and Gomez wasn't there. I called him and he told me to wait while I sent a rookie to come get me. So I just stood in the dark and looked up at the moon and thought of my friend. But then one more message came through from the other side.
Come and see,
B said in her familiar sing-song voice.
It's beautiful, Gil.
Dante's voice spoke up.
She's holding my baby daughter.
That was Within a Gloomy Wood by author Cecily 1987. A little about the author. Cecily 1987 has a background in law enforcement, corrections, and security. This story draws from an actual experience he had on the job. At this point in his life, however, he'd rather write about crazy incidents than experience them firsthand. He names all his cats after anime characters and is a fan of Stephen King, Warhammer 40K, Silent Hill, and Max Payne. Hey, thanks, Cecily.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit SimplyScaryPodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment, 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, friend, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, and don't let Chester out there blame his farts on your skunky rolling rock. May the wind be at your back, and may the road rise up to meet you. May the saddest day of your future be no worse than the happiest day of your past. And at the risk of sounding sentimental, go fuck yourself. Good night, y'all.